You're listening to Privacy and Security Insights, brought to you by Picasso.
Hello, and welcome to Series 2, Episode 1 of the Picasso podcast series. I'm Steve Wright, board advisor on the Picasso board, and I am delighted to be here today interviewing Ash Costello, partner at Gunner Cook, privacy guru, privacy lawyer, advises on US, Irish, and UK privacy law. Ash, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure to join you on this podcast.
Very good. Very good. Really eager. I have to say, Ash, your article was fantastic. So thank you. It was an education all in its own. And so the questions are all around privacy and blockchain. And so without further ado, I will crack on with the first question. So what are the key compliance requirements that organizations leveraging blockchain and crypto technologies must adhere to, despite the unique features of the tech stack to comply with UK GDPR? What compliance requirements, given the crypto and blockchain, and how are they complying with GDPR? So that's your first big question. Over to you, Ash.
Thank you. So I'll describe, first of all, the key features of blockchain, which are relevant in a privacy discussion. So the three key features are the permanence of the data on a blockchain, the transparency across the blockchain, and also the immutability. So it's visible to potentially everybody, it's permanent, and it's immediately there. So you have those three features, which are kind of inherent in a lot of blockchains. Some have different features, but those are kind of the three features that kind of define what blockchain is. And I'll just give a very, very short description of how that works. So normal technology, you have, for example, if you think of a bank, and we've all had this, you know, in offices on Friday, you know, the servers, you know, IT backed up the service, then we all have deadlines on a Friday, NRT are backing up the service at 4 o'clock, and everyone's like, oh, my deadline, we need to leave too. So we all miss our deadlines on Fridays because IT are backing up the service with the data in one central place. That means hacking a normal system, you just have to hack the servers. You hack one thing and it's, you know, you change whatever data you want. You can interfere with data whatever way you want to interfere with it. On the blockchain technology instead, when you add data to a blockchain stack, it is shared on not one server, but for example, your computer might be one of a server, if you call it. So the data is stored on multiple entities at the same time, immediately, and it's visible to everybody at the same time. So it is much safer in that regard, because if someone wanted to hack, they'd have to hack everybody. And also the way the data is saved, it is saved, if you like, in blocks. So the data is saved into a block, and then that block is, if you like, I've got to say zip filed, you know, it's condensed and it's given a hash code. And then that hash code is the first line of data in the next block. So that if you change the data in the first block, then that hash code changes. So if you think of it as a Jenga, you know, the whole Jenga kind of changes or collapses because, you know, the data at an earlier block changed. So you see, then it is very hard to hack or to change data in blockchain technology. So that's why it's become popular. And another feature of its popularity is the immediacy. So peer-to-peer transactions are immediate. We can have peer-to-peer banking. We don't have like the lag. So those are the features of blockchain which impact privacy. And so your question was the compliance challenges then from a privacy perspective. You can't delete the data. You can't fix the data. So, you know, the GDPR principles that we're all familiar with, data accountability and transparency and security and safety, everyone can potentially see the data. And it is globally visible. When you are working with some blockchain technology, you can't do GDPR really. So a lot of disclosures have to be made when you're dealing with blockchain technology to tell the people, you know, your users, everyone's going to see this potentially, we're not going to be able to change it, all your GDPR rights. You kind of have to tell them that we can't comply with GDPR, you know, in this type of technology.
It's interesting because you've actually answered the next question I was going to ask in part, which was what the challenges faced by blockchain entities ensuring compliance with UK GDPR, particularly regarding the transfer and the protection of data. So maybe just focus on that. So you've spoken about the integrity, if you like, and the way you described it with the Jenga was brilliant. I like that. So how then, from a transfer perspective, what are the considerations?
You're transferring data and you don't know where. you're transferring the data. Because again, I say, so blockchain isn't like the internet. There isn't one. So for example, you might set up your own blockchain, Steve, and that would be different to the one I set up. And all of them are very different. So I'm talking about this in very general senses, in case you've got blockchain purists listening in, screaming at their, you know, devices going, shit on. So every technology is different. So, and the newer technologies are a lot more privacy accessible. But to answer your question about transparency, visible potentially immediately to everybody on that chain, or even not on the chain. For some, for example, the way they kind of work is, if to use the analogy of kind of like a, you know, a network of different, maybe with the Bitcoin blockchain, for example, there are millions of devices which store the data on that Bitcoin blockchain. So that means if you store your data in the Bitcoin blockchain, so blockchain technology, it is just a data storage system. That's all it does. You know, it kind of stores data. So if you store your data on the Bitcoin blockchain stack, for example, it's visible immediately on my computer, on your computer, on whoever else's computer. It is hashed, but that hash is reversible. And as I know, there's a lot of privacy, you know, purists listening in, and we, hashing would be pseudonymous, not anonymous. So that challenge is, you know, you've transferred it immediately onto a global platform. It's gone across every border. It is everywhere, potentially.
So with something simple, you know, Picasso is very practical. So how? I'm thinking pragmatically here. How do we adhere to privacy rights for of individuals?
That one, some of the data regulators around Europe have addressed this. So the French data regulators, CNIL, were the first to come out with advice on this back in 2018. Okay. And they said that people using blockchain technology have to take some accountability, and you are choosing to store data, you're choosing to use this tech. I mean, you could go to a regular bank, but you're choosing to use, for example, blockchain-based technology bank. So you have to take accountability for the fact that you are putting your data on a public platform. And so by doing so, with the knowledge that it is a public platform, you are consenting to what is happening on that platform, to your data being visible for infinity and beyond. And if your data is wrong, then it's wrong forever. You can't change it. If you change the data, you can like correct it later on, but you still have incorrect data in the interim. So that is something that has been danced around with regulators. Yes. No one else wanted to say it's bad, don't use it. Yes. So because the technology is fantastic, but the privacy challenge for some of them, for the ones where the data is made public, is the fact that it is public. If you want to put your stuff in this, you know, technology, then, you know, it's visible. Take responsibility for your actions. So the key then for entities using blockchain technology is to disclose. I mean, that's your huge risk there. You know, if people are consenting to their data being forever or permanently visible to everybody, then you have to make sure that they are consenting to everything. You tell them the sources of where you get their data. You tell them where you're disclosing the data. The ICO tightened up, you know, their advice on disclosures recently, not particularly in relation to blockchain. But over the last few years, they have tightened up those disclosures that have to be made in, you know, all these website privacy policies, disclose the sources and disclose how you're using it, disclose where you're transferring it, and particularly disclose where it's going overseas, and disclose, obviously, that we're not breaching, that we're not really able to, you know, protect your GDPR rights, and that by using this, you are confirming that you're okay with your GDPR rights not being available to you.
Right. That is the key point there, isn't it? Yes, that you are actually, in a transparent way, very aware of what you're sharing. And we were talking before we went live about this case in Spain. Obviously, I'm not going to ask you to sort of quote verbatim what was the finding of and the situation or what the judges agreed. But it's an interesting case, and that's going to worry from a legal perspective, you know, and other regulators around Europe are going to be looking at that case and going, oh, hang on a minute. So just for our listeners.
You know what, the privacy has got exciting in the past few months. At the end of last year, a German regulator took some excellent decisions in my regard against, you know, credit reference agencies going, yeah, the whole business model is, you know, non-compliant, the whole business model. So, you know, they kind of wonderful to see that happening. And I'm looking forward to, you know, that waterfall of hopefully decisions across the rest of Europe with the credit reference agencies. But back to your question, another exciting decision is this one in Spain with WorldCoin. So WorldCoin is a crypto coin in which people scan their irises in. So you're putting your biometric data on this public blockchain. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a few of the regulators around Europe, including the ICO, have kind of given warnings going, oh, we're not sure this is compliant. Beware, beware. Yes. But the Spanish regulator has actually said, nope, stop. You are not allowed to continue operating in Spain. You know, that this enforcement and this fines, et cetera, et cetera. Irish data regulator pay heed, but the Spanish regulator has said enough already. You know, this is not GDPR compliant. You're processing biometric data without any protection. So they forced them to cease processing biometric data. They refused to allow them to operate in Spain. So that was already exciting. and then even more exciting, so WorldCoin tried to get an injunction to be allowed to recommence trading in Spain. And that was booted out as well. So it is very exciting. So well done, Spain.
Yeah, it's incredible. And this is fresh off the press. So this is really timely for our listeners. Yeah. We'll send some links in the email when we send this out to you or on fire, so you can follow the story yourself and make your own conclusions. But what does this mean? What are the potential penalties and consequences for the UK GDPR? Because obviously that's Spain and they've set a precedent and they really utilised their powers. But what would that, you know, a crypto coin be quaking in their boots in the UK?
I think so. Anyone with biometric data, I think, should be worried. I'm going to describe, because it might be possible, because by biometric data in Spain, it's the iris, you know, that WorldCoin are using. But a lot of technology, you know, when I mentioned devices, it could be on a phone, for example. A phone is a device which can be used as one of these storage entities on a particular blockchain. And I know I've been minting, if you like, coins on my phone. The way you create coins is you mint them by making your device available to the chain, and then they reward you by giving you a coin of that particular, you know, what do you call it, network. So if you think about the biometric data your phone has, which potentially this blockchain has access to, all these things that say they don't share data, they still share data. So if you think about one of these networks, which is using a phone, for example, you've got voice, photos, location, all these other things, and not just that, kind of your relationships then, because we'll hear other voices potentially as well. And if something is connected to Alexa or Siri as well, you've got all that built in as well. So all these devices, the Internet of Things, which maybe you think you don't have it, but you kind of do, like your printer even is listening to you. And no, I do not need a tinfoil hat, thank you. I'm not crazy. These things, they actually do update themselves. Even if you think they're not on a network, for example, I discovered recently my printer has its own IP address. I cannot stop it updating itself. Even if it's not, I'm disconnected it from the Wi-Fi, it still manages to update itself. And that's not a fancy printer. So you think your things are not devices. Back to your question, in terms of regulators and the data that is being processed on these blockchain networks, I think they should be more aware of how the blockchain technology works and what data it actually has access to. So even if you're not purposely putting data on a blockchain, is your personal data kind of leaking onto the blockchain by the way the device is connected to the network? Again, I said, you know, every blockchain technology is different. So maybe the devices do not take data from phones and devices that they shouldn't. Maybe they just take what you give them. But a lot of them do. And is that, we have a decision now in Europe, a very, very firm decision, which relates to biometric data in particular. I think we'll see a lot more firm decisions from regulators across Europe. Germany in 2023 with that, I'm a credit reference agency, decision was very, very strong. And now Spain just forcing them to halt proceedings. I'd be worried if I was processing, you know, biometric data. I would be looking in, how do I tighten up everything?
That was my closing question, because you wouldn't believe it, but we've run out of time as usual on these podcasts. We have such good conversations, such wonderful guests. So the closing question really is thoughts, practical advice you can give our listeners.
One of the reasons I actually got really interested in this area is because it was lockdown and I'm a geek, but also the necessity is the mother of invention. So you have, when GDPR came along, there was uproar in Europe. It's going to force innovation out of Europe. It's going to lock the brains. It's going to be a brain drain. The reverse has happened, obviously, because, you know, it's just technology. It's not gravity. You know, gravity we're kind of stuck with. But they've even managed to, you know, defeat gravity. This is just technology. It's just code. You can code anything. So we have lots of solutions now for this. So there's three ways that data can go onto a blockchain, or, you know, that data interacts with the blockchain. I say a blockchain. Not the blockchain, in case Linda Getz is listening and screaming at me going, Ash, it's not their blockchain, because they're all different. So there's three ways that data interacts with a blockchain. And at first, you know, it's on-ramp, how it enters the blockchain, and then the transaction, you know, it travels from A to B, for example, and then off-ramp. So there are solutions for each of those stages. The most common one is zero knowledge proof, ZKP. This is a whole new industry of encryption and, yeah, fantastic encryption. I mean, the mathematical brains who have been working on this are absolutely extraordinary. So zero knowledge proofs are the most common, and even zero knowledge proofs are an industry in their own right. Not only are these privacy enhancing technologies, there's a lot of them now. They are a huge industry, but each one of them individually within their own right is also an industry. So zero knowledge proof is the main one. What they do is they allow a fact to be proven without disclosing the underlying evidence. The example commonly given is proving you're over 21 to be able to get a drink without having to show your passport, your driving license. You know, that has too much info on there that is not necessary to actually proving that you're 21 or over. So you have zero knowledge proof. They can be used, they're commonly used for the transaction, you know, the A to B type scenario. Yeah. Other solutions then are secure multi-party computation. These are extraordinary as well. This is where, like I was saying before, database, that blockchains, they're just data storage. And so one of the cryptos I worked with, they had some fantastic mathematicians who would find a way to fragment data so that when you're sharing the data, my personal data, all my stuff, if I'm giving it to a bank or whatever, I just give them the bits. I just give them a code, if you like. I'm using this SMPC, Secure Multi-Party Computation, you know, type of storage system. And the bank can manipulate my data as they need without actually seeing the data. So the fragmented data can be manipulated without other parties actually touching the data or knowing the data. And I'm not describing it very well, but they are phenomenal. I'll provide information later on about that kind of technology. I'll provide more information on those in links.
Wonderful. And, you know, this is such a big subject, right? And we've crammed that into 20 minutes. Okay. So our poor listeners now are thinking, wow, if like me, they were scribbling down loads of notes as you spoke, Ash. I think the wonderful thing about Picasso and the podcast series is we were trying to scratch the surface, right? Give a little bit of insight. Obviously, this is a deep subject matter expert, and we are delighted to have Ash Costello, partner at Gunnar Cook, here today. So thank you for joining us, Ash. It's been a wonderful first episode of series two, and what a kickoff, you know. And all I've got in my head now is Jenga, complexity of all of this blockchain. So do read the article, listeners, and obviously do reach out to Ash directly via LinkedIn if you've got further information. But thank you, listeners, for listening in today. I'm Steve Wright, signing off on behalf of Picasso podcast series. Thank you and goodbye.